Welcome to the IBA Oil and Gas podcast. The theme today is keeping the lights on oil and gas development in a low carbon world. My name is Claudia Santos Cruz. I am an officer of the Oil and Gas Committee and a partner at the Portuguese law firm Moraes Leitão. I have today with me Jane Miller, General Counsel of Cheiron Petroleum Corporation in Egypt. And we also have Maria Cristina Breda, Environment, Climate Change and Sustainability Leader at Ernst & Young, who will be talking to Emanuela Gallo, Legal Affairs, Head of HSC and Sustainability at Eni in Milan. One of the questions that we have coming out of this topic is, how can oil and gas contribute to sustainable energy mix?
The first point is that we need security of supply. The second point is that governments need to reduce their reliance on imports and expand their own domestic supply options. And thirdly, and possibly most important, the secure supply must be affordable, because renewable technologies will take some time to be established to provide a continuous source of energy which is going to be accessible by all. I think that oil and gas has a long history of putting on stream capex-intensive facilities in a very quick way using tried and tested technology. And there's some newer technology in there as well, which is contributing to the energy transition. Things like the floating storage and regasification units for LNG.
One of the things that worries us a lot in our oil and gas committee is this issue of a lot of opposition to oil and gas companies coming from the public that is sceptical about the environmental consequences of fossil fuels, sceptical shareholders, and then we have policymakers who are divided between reaching decarbonisation targets and yet supplying oil and gas to the planet, to the world. Jane, coming out of those concerns that we have on our committee, how do you see the legal challenges faced by oil and gas companies as they move towards transition?
It's a great question, and I think there are many challenges which will be faced by oil and gas companies. From a licensing standpoint, I think governments are going to put companies under a greater degree of scrutiny, both from the point of view of divestments as well as acquisitions. And this might even get to the level of approving annual work programs and permitting activity. This focus will be on compliance with ESG reporting. And I think that's only the start of it, because those regulations will be translated into our joint venture arrangements. So the people that we do business with, they share our costs and risks with, where we'll have compliance obligations to each other. And also in our lending instruments, where lenders who want to show their investors that they're in fact investing responsibly will put companies under a huge degree of due diligence, scrutiny, auditing, benchmarking. So from my point of view, I'm a little bit concerned that we devise a set of rules which are reachable by all, and particularly coming from a small private company, it's important that these arrangements take account of the cost impact, which can be borne by the majors, but which will put many small companies out of business.
I suppose a related question to that is in the different jurisdictions. For example, you have a parent company subject to certain requirements in one country and then different ones in perhaps more underdeveloped oil and gas markets. How do we reconcile this in the future in relation to reporting requirements?
This is a big concern. And I think that with the best aspirations in the world, of course, we're combined in the common objective of getting to a quick and easy transition. The problem will be having going to the best level of standards for shareholders to see, and also for lenders to cope with, but actually to translate those at grassroots level to the countries in which we'll do business, where the standards may be completely different, or where, in fact, they may be competing challenges. For example, in many countries around the world, what's most important for them is to increase, surprisingly, crude oil production for industrial production in their countries, which is not what we hear at European or North American level.
Great. And I'm just finalising before we pass over to Maria Cristina. I think we've all experienced a number of shocks in the last years. I think there's a heavy push to transition, and I think it's fair to say that most oil and gas companies are trying to comply in the best way possible. But it is important to strike a balance between permitting a healthy oil and gas industry, because we need it. We don't want prices going through the roof. We don't want inflation, job losses, and all the rest of it associated with it. And I think it's fair to say that oil and gas companies are looking at their business plans, how they do business, and it's quite a lot in an industry that is constantly under attack. One of the big issues that comes out of the sector is ESG, and perhaps on that word, I pass over to Maria Cristina.
Emanuela, we were talking about ESG factors. How are oil and gas companies approaching ESG factors?
So, thank you, Maria Cristina. ESG represents the new challenges for business, industrial, commercial world. Facing them implies a holistic approach and view on social needs and expectations. For an oil and gas company, this is moreover challenging. It has indeed to answer a constantly growing global energy demand, progressively changing instruments and business, taking into account both communities and workers' needs, rights, wellness, not forgiving financial aspect. Oil and gas companies are rethinking themselves, and it is a very sensitive path to integrate business targets and new goals, the so-called just transition.
And what about ESG due diligence? What are your thoughts about the forthcoming mandatory ESG due diligence legislation in the EU? Do you expect to change your diligence processes in response to this legislation?
I think it's a very good attempt of legislator to translate into law, principle, best practice, instrument growing, such as the relationship between human rights and climate, governance issues, and ESG spectrum in general. This attempt, if well conducted, could help companies on having clarity on perimeter of goals and its obligation. As oil and gas, we have already opened an internal debate on this matter, of course, already addressing effort, and as in-house counsel, we are very committed to assist the company, coordinate all necessary specialized inputs for a continuous improvement.
A last question about the role and about the interactions between in-house counsel and law firms. Which type of external legal support is sought by ESG in-house counsel?
Thank you for the question. I can summarize my answer using three C. First, C is competence, because you need a strong base on environment, labor, compliance, energy, risk assessment, M&A, and contractual negotiation, mixed with the proof of knowledge on company process and targets as a whole. On the second staff, in-house counsel, of course, has a privileged position, but we really need to find external expertise a good hand to face this challenge. Second C is creativity, since it is completely new and a mix of myotic and supporting strategic role. The lawyer is called to find the new paths and the innovative solutions starting from a high-level vision. And third, complex proactivity. You have to stimulate, urge, helping self-assessment, so not only risk identification, trends monitoring, but risk evaluation and what-if exercise.
And do you think that the Italian market is structured to provide such support?
I think we are on path. It's challenging and we are going on.
Thank you for joining us on this oil and gas podcast.